How about just for those of you who are new, most of you are already old timers, Stern is so lucky to have Mrs. Smed here and a tremendous role model to the ladies here. So everyone should be encouraged to form a relationship. Yes, microphone?
Microphone.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, it's so nice to see all of you. Most of you are familiar faces, and it's always nice having opportunities to learn together and opportunities of growth together. Better? Okay, thank you so much. Okay, I want to maybe just have something that's more by way of an expression of thoughts or a schmooze on a topic as opposed to a sheer per se.
Yes, how are you?
Sorry, embarrassing. But, okay. And Mrs. Smed asked me a few days ago what I want to speak about, and because I'm completely not creative, so I said, you know, it's Rosh Chodesh Adar, Adar Rishon, and there's at least some kiyum of Simcha on Adar Rishon, so why don't we speak about the topic of discovering happiness and discovering joy and inner happiness. And she texted later, she said, oh, Rabbi Simon was coming last night, I'm not sure if... how many of you were there? Simon is an excellent Magichir and Rosh Hashiva at NYU. And he was also speaking about happiness, which probably means that most of the Rosh Hashiva and Mashgichim are equally uncreative as I am. But I really thought that the truth is happiness and joy, simcha, it's not something that you should sort of speak about once and then come back to, you know, 6 months later or a year later. But really sort of the essence of life is finding deeply felt happiness. And the truth is, like, sometimes we make things like complicated in life. You know, sometimes I'll be speaking to guys in yeshiva, and maybe they're dating a young woman, and they're speaking about sort of like different issues, and this hashkafa, and this issue, and this means on this quality, and then I'll ask the person, well, do you enjoy being together? You know, are you happy when you're around her? Or I'll ask that to a female. I'll be like, oh, wow, that's a good question. Almost like that's sort of like a secondary issue. And it's never a secondary issue. The essence of life is feeling that sense of joy and simcha and nachas ruach. That's not sort of the cherry on top. That's like the whole basis of just living a meaningful life and a spiritual life. So I want to sort of give an entree to that issue of simcha, different sort of thoughts and feelings or stories, reflections, marmakomos on the topic, by throwing out a question that I always love by the Sfas Emes. Everyone know who the Sfas Emes is? Anybody? Okay. So the Sfas Emes, of course, was the first Gerer Rebbe. Just an incredible Adam Gadol and one of the great Balei Machshava in the Hasidish world or any world. But the Sfas Emes also has a Sefer on Shas, and he asked the following question at the end of Maseches Tanis. We know, of course, the Mishnah says, Mishenichnas, what does Mishnah say? Anybody? Mishenichnas, this is sort of a trick question. So Mishenichnas Av Mematim Besimcha. That's all the Mishnah says, that when Av comes in, so we have to reduce and diminish Simcha. And then the Gemara later on says, of course, Mishenichnas Adar Marvin Simcha. Right? When Av comes in, we diminish Simcha. When Adar comes in, we expand Simcha. Now, which of those two statements are brought down in the Shulchan Aruch? The statement of a diminishment of Simcha by Av, or an expansion of Simcha by Adar? Anybody know? This is not probably a random question that probably any knowledgeable person would know. But anybody even want to venture a guess? Okay. But Shoshana Shire was in Stern. You could always count on her to be bold, you know. And she also knew all the answers, which also helped. So the answer is that only Mishenichnas Av Mematim B'Simcha, right? That's the only thing that's brought down in the beginning of the halachos of Tisha B'Av and the 3 weeks and Simen Tav Kuf Nun Aleph. Question is, why is it not mentioned by Adar? Why is there no obligation? Why is there no statement in halacha that a person has to be Marve B'Simcha in Adar? Why is it only by Av and not by Adar? Right. So before I maybe spend the next few minutes speaking perhaps a thought about that, do you have any thoughts? why does in halacha it only mandate the diminishment of simcha as opposed to the expansion of simcha of Adar? Not a simple question. Mr. Thurman. Right. Maybe it's not natural per se. It's hard to really attain that. You can't sort of like mandate simcha as opposed to being the ma'ik of simcha. We can tell you, you know, don't do whatever. Don't go to a ball game. Don't go shopping. Don't, you know, whatever you're going to do. But actual simcha is hard to come by. That's an excellent comment, by the way. This is not the same thing as Ms. Thurm said, but it's actually what some of the Jewish philosophers mentioned about why it's not a mitzvah. We mentioned this like a few years ago before most of you were here, why it is not a mitzvah of belief in God. It's not, according to some Rishonim, it's not one of the Taryag mitzvahs. And Rav Chasdai Kreskes says in Chasdai Hashem, in the Mas Hashem, he says you can't mandate belief. He says it's not something which is subject to sort of like the realm of mitzvos, and therefore belief can't be mandated by Taryag mitzvos. That might be a little bit sort of what you're saying here by simcha as well. Okay? Anybody else?
But there's kind of like a constant demand for us to do the simcha, so it's unnatural for us to be behind it.
Such a nice perspective. You know, that sort of simcha has to be the natural state, therefore it should always be there. And it's not like, you know, it's sort of like a, it's like a constant. You know, so therefore maybe it's not subject to halacha of something new. That could be. That could be. So let me maybe just share a few perspectives about the idea of simcha, and then if we have time, so then we'll come back to this question of the Sfas-Emes. But the Sfas-Emes gives a very sort of halachic technical answer, and I want to maybe go in a slightly different direction. One of the great things about getting older and maturing is that our perspectives about life grow, develop, and mature. I have a child who I'm going to reference later, who Izzy and other people here know, who just started high school this past week, actually. And you ask him, and he's probably like a teenager, but like on steroids, not actual steroids, but like, you know, every teenage quality, like plus 1,000. And you ask him, like, you know, what would make you happy in life? You know, and truth is, he's 14 years old, but he has a lot of people who are 24 years old or 34 years old. You know, they might give or they might feel or they might act like some degree his answer. You know, more Jordans. It's his unfortunate to have a father who's in Rabbanus who doesn't want to buy Air Jordans, but more Jordans and more this and more that and more clothing and more, you know, better basketball skills and all those things. And for a good part of our life, we revolve our happiness about things that, you know, one might say are klapei chutz. You know, one might say are accomplishments. One might say are things that could be acquired, popularity, et cetera, et cetera. And those are all important things. You know, maturation brings a person like a different sense about simcha, about sort of the internal world of simcha, about a person's soul. So I want to mention a few different perspectives. Where the approach of simcha by the Baal Machshava and by some of the Jewish philosophers and secular philosophers is about a simcha that obviously is much more internal. So a beautiful tefillah of Rabbeinu Bachya and Chovas Levavos, this is maybe approach number one. Rabbeinu Bachya prays that he has a life that avoids pizor. Right? Pizor is a beautiful word, probably not so easy to define. Anybody have a good definition for the word pizor? Have you heard the word before? Anyone? So pizor, again, it's so much easier to say it in Hebrew, is essentially where everything about our life is like diffuse. It's like spread out. It's not joined together. It's not synthesized. Pizor means sort of feeling sort of the worlds of contradictions and the worlds of svekos and the worlds of conflict. And a life, says Rabbeinu Bachya, again, this is going back 1,000 years, a simcha is a life without pizor, without being spread out. Now, what does it mean not being spread out? So, of course, that means on a very simple level about just, you know, not feeling always harried and not feeling always rushed and not commuting for 10 hours and not doing this, not feeling like, you know, the feeling for finals, like a chicken without a head and running here and forgetting that and making plans for this, but just like that feeling of like everything sort of coming together in peace. But obviously, what Rabbeinu Bachya means isn't just that feeling of not being harried, but it's the feeling that the Baalei Mussar talk about of having a real synthesis in a person's life. And if there are pieces in a person's life that are not synthesized, and the person is a tremendous Baal Bitachon and they daven and they're kind-hearted and this, that, but they have a horrible temper, you know, and they terrorize their kids and they're yelling at their mother and they're doing this, or a person views themselves as being, you know, an Eved Hashem and whatever exactly that means, but they're also an addict or they're addicted to whatever the case is, or there's pieces in a person's life that just feel that it is breaking that balance and that synthesis. So that lack of simcha, and Bein Bachya says that simcha comes and it feels like my whole life works together with a certain shlemus, with a certain wholeness. And that's clearly one type of simcha. There's another simcha, and I know some of you just started Stern last week or 2 weeks ago, so I don't make anybody nervous about thinking about their futures or what they're doing in 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 years from now. If you look in some of the Mefarshim, when they describe the language of Paro, this is sort of number two. Number one is not having Kizor. Number two is that Paro says that he wants to give an Yisrael Avodas Parech. What's a good definition for the word Avodas Parech? Not, again, not an easily defined word, although maybe easier than Kizor. What's Avodas Parech, anyone? So Avodas Parech, the way the Mefarshim say, is when a person feels sort of just like a meaninglessness of their endeavors. You know, a meaninglessness of their life. And if you do that for long enough, and obviously Paro was a brilliant slave master, you do that for long enough, a person just sort of just loses a chius. They lose a vitality when you just feel, do I feel just satisfied? Do I feel meaning in my life? And the greatest simcha, which obviously entails a lot of self-knowledge and a lot of self-reflection. But the greatest simcha is when a person feels that who I am, what my essence is, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created me, actually is matching with my life, with what I do and what I choose for a profession and how I spend my time, where the essence of who I am is actually finding manifestation of that in the life that I'm living. And when a person feels, you know what, I have this koach, or this essence, or this what to give, or this what to contribute, and these joys, and this netiyah in life, but my life is not a canvas for that. So what an enormous lack of simcha. The person always feels, is this a fundamental life of meaning? It's amazing what a person thinks about in the world. I'm not saying anybody in this room. But a person thinks of, how am I going to do this, and how am I going to get this internship, and how am I going to do on this test, or how am I going to pay for this mortgage, and how am I going to, this just normal life stuff, and I say that without any criticism. How much time is spent thinking of, how do I craft a life for myself that I can look back after 85, 90, 95 years and say, this was deeply, deeply meaningful, with a sense of deeply felt shleimus and simcha. That requires thoughtfulness, that requires a person to be a Baal Chalom. And it doesn't mean that every person should go into chinuch, or every person should go into psychology, or that every person has to make aliyah, although okay, we'll leave that for a different time, but that every person is having a feeling of, like, this is something which I find meaningful. It could be professionally, it could be personally, it could be in everything that a person's doing, but that needs to be, like, the first thought, and again, that sense of simcha when who you are is matching the reality of a person's life. This may be not be the biggest issue, but just mention something that I personally gives me simcha. Again, every person is different. And every person has to know sort of their own soul in a way and what every person sort of needs. But the more that we live like a life of harchava, of expansiveness and experience, right? You can live life sort of like in a little box and feeling like always nervous and like neurotic and like afraid of stepping out of that box and just sort of like a horse with like blinders on. And for some people that definitely works. But to some degree, what the Balei Mechshava speak about is feeling close to Kadosh Baruch Hu mitoch harchavas hadas. Harchavas hadas means a lot of different things. It means this sort of like an open soul in a way. And that means towards nature. And that means towards this, like, loving humanity, different types of people. And that means through all sorts of interests and in both Jewish and perhaps not Jewish as well. Or just like a sense of going through life instead of with a sense of like music of nervousness, but a sense of just being engrossed and immersed in the world in an appropriate way. There's obviously some experiences that, you know, should definitely be out of that. But the difference between just the feeling of always closing ourselves off versus just the sense of embrace of the universe and everything that's in the universe. I want to tell you an amazing, amazing Sfas Emes. So I mentioned three things so far. Number one, a life of Pizor, where you feel contradictions versus a life of Shlemus. Number two, the Simcha that comes by, the Simcha that comes from having this, like a meaningful life and feeling of who I am and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me find expression in the world. The simcha that comes through just being a little bit expansive and being sort of open and being embracing and being sort of bringing the world into your orbit. Think about another simcha that I think for me is so critical, and knowing many of you, I imagine you feel the same as well. This is one of my favorite ideas of the Sfas Emes, and this is something that probably is ad nauseum that I love to quote this idea. So, of course, we know the Mishnah says, Don es kol Ha'adam l'kafzchus, right? Now, if I just ask you, this is not a trick question, how do you define that Mishnah? Don es kol ha'adam l'kafzchus. All right? I think we're going to put you on the spot. Okay. I think you should judge every what? Every person l'kafzchus, you should judge every person favorably. Which, by the way, for certain people is very easy, and certain people it's not so easy, and different situations it's easy, some situations it's not easy, and how to sort of give the benefit of the doubt. I want to tell you to do something, and Izzy and others have doubted in our shul, so I don't want to say anything that is, you know, people start thinking, well, you know, who's that he's talking about? I remember our first year in our shul in Muncie, some 14 years ago, I turned around during Yom Kippur davening, which is probably like a big mistake, and I saw two guys in the back talking during Unisana Tokens. You know, mi yechieh, mi yamus, and they're talking about, I can only imagine what, and you know, in the back, they're just talking and talking and talking and talking during this, like, this most meaningful of moments of davening. And for me, coming from the shul I came from in Baltimore, and I hadn't spent so many years in YG's Medrash, like, I was ready to go back there and, like, you know, start throwing punches at these people in the middle of Yom Kippur davening. That was not the best rabbinic idea. And then, sort of over a period of time, I began to feel, you know what, okay, listen, here are these people, and this sort of ties into the Sfas Emes, of not a lot of education, not a lot of background. They had no idea what the words mean. They had no idea, they didn't have the same sheep experience that I had, and the types of parents that I probably had, etc. And just like, now I view that person sort of completely differently. In every sort of situation, you can look at someone and say, okay, like, what's their history? You know, what's their life narrative? Like, where are they coming from? So the Sfas Emes says, to that note, and it's just such a beautiful idea, if they really need you to judge every person the cops post, then it should be don es kol adam, judge every person. But the Mishnah says don es kol ha'adam, judge the person, the kasvos. Right, everyone hear the difference between adam versus ha'adam? So the Sfas Emes says what that means is that when you look at the entire adam, ha'adam, the entire person, so almost by definition, you're going to judge them, the kasvos. You're going to judge them in a different type of way. When you see who they are, and you see their background, and you see the pain that they're in, and you see what's driving certain types of things. The last time I was here, I gave a share about maybe navigating relations with parents. And sometimes you have to sort of stop and say, well, where's my sort of like mother or father coming from that they're sort of adopted a certain type of stance or attitude or behavior? Like, how did they grow up, and what pain is driving them? And then you know, when you can sort of adopt that ha'adam, see the whole person, the way in which we view that person is totally different. And the Bali Musar say, something what Cook spoke about so beautifully, that would be our perspective about the entire world. You know, when Cook would see a Chiloni Jew in Eretz Yisrael who is like, you know, vociferously and vitriol, anti-religious, you know, it wasn't like this negative feeling, ah, you know, this Chiloni over here, this person over here. There was a sense, wow, this person's a Jew, and what's their history, and the simcha that that brings to the world, the simcha that when you can view the world from that prism of positivity and love and Abbas Yisrael and just giving people the benefit of the doubt and seeing the entire picture, like, to go through your life with such a deeply profound feeling of simcha about the world. Not critically and not negatively, it just, I mean, what a blessing to sort of live that way. What a blessing to live that way. I think it's a nice story. I think I'm allowed to use the person's name. Many of you, I imagine, are from the Five Towns. So if you are, so you probably know Rabbi Storch, who's one of the principals of ERS, and we're very, very close old friends. We're the same age. We moved together for a little while. Anyways, I'll say this very briefly. So his third child is this year in yeshiva called Torah Stein. Are you able to Torah Stein? Okay, so Torah Stein is a very popular yeshiva. It's very, very hard to get into. And Rabbi Storch's son had gone to Darkei Torah for like, you know, 15 years. And then 12th grade, he switched to Waterbury Yeshiva. And I imagine all of you know Waterbury Yeshiva. You know, it's not the place you want to go to if you want to live like in a small little, you know, it's a little bit place. Let's put it that way. And lots of things that go on. It's an amazing place, but lots of things that go on. So this son, Rabbi Storch's son, did not get an interview right away for Torah Chaim because some people applied. But they pushed and they pulled some strings. And finally, either like the Skadu Yeshiva, the Yeshiva, one of the people met with Rabbi Storch's son. It's not important who it was. So he sat down, he's looking through like the, you know, the resume, he's looking through, and this person, first time, asked by Storch's son, he said, what a question. How do you do all that garbage at Waterbury? Like, that was like a question on me too. So Storch's son said, like, you know, Rebbe, like, you know, it's a 17-year-old kid, very aggressive. He's like, Rebbe, like, no offense. And he said, garbage? He said, struggles. He said, how do I sort of see the struggles of those guys in Waterbury? That day, he got the letter that he was accepted to Waterbury. You know, and as like a 17-year-old kid, like, it's not garbage. Like, he struggles. Like, okay, so the person's acting this certain type of way. So, like, what's the whole picture? What's, you know, so it's a nice sort of like almost similar idea. The Medrash Shmuel, he discusses a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says that you should know Siva Olam Chaveira. Right? What does it mean, know Siva Olam Chaveira? You should be empathetic. You should be concerned. So Medrash Shmuel says, the nos of olam chavero means you should tolerate your chaver, not that any of you would ever act this way, but even when they act like an olam, even when they're acting like a burden onto you, or a pain, or they're obnoxious, or they're crappy, or they're this, he said, you know, a person has to look, if you want to live a life of simcha, and sometimes say, you know what, they're acting a certain way, they're talking a certain type of way, but that's just sort of the outer layer of the world. What's sort of like inner, what's sort of going behind that? Yeah, that's the outer layer, and let's tolerate that. And I can tolerate all those things. But what's sort of the essence of a person and their goodness? And just to sort of focus on that, and that's when you go through life. That's a life of enormous simcha, that positivity of just the experiences. There's another idea that I wanted to mention about simcha. We spoke about finding meaning professionally and personally. We spoke about a lack of pizor. We spoke about having a certain openness. We spoke about the simcha of sort of embracing people and seeing the totality of people. I think it's one of those beautiful ideas from the book. And obviously, at least in my mind, every word that the book says, it's just, like it touches like the essence of a person, of a Jew. And I don't know, maybe you've had the experience, like the read of the book is very, very, very difficult often, but it's a life changer. His works are something that just changes one's entire just almost like feelings about Paiso and Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Kook discusses of why it is in the mitzvah of Bikurim, which of course is found in Parshas Pesachim. So there's the mitzvah of Simcha Bikurim. Okay. Why daf? Because they're mitzvah simcha.
Not many mitzvah that are simcha. People have some nice and shady this mitzvah simcha, or it's got to this mitzvah simcha, but it's not something that we have so often, this mitzvah simcha.
So Rav Kook said, and I just love this idea, and I think hopefully it'll resonate with you as well. So you think about this person who's a farmer in Eretz Yisrael, and he comes with his basket of fruit, and he says, "Arami oved avi." This is an opportunity for a person to almost like move beyond just the here and now of an experience. It's an opportunity for a person to think, "I'm in Eretz Yisrael now. What did my grandfather have to do to allow me to have this piece of land? And great-grandparents, and the history of my family, and Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the Abdus and the Sheba that we experienced, and now here I am standing in Har Ayis, in the tent of the Adepa." You know what the simple is of that feeling of like looking back on one's life, and feeling that the pieces of one's life, that there's a shleimus to that, there's a piece to that, you can look back on one's life and say, wow, like everything that has happened just brought me to this place, standing at this place. So that was a retrospective, historical look on a person's life and seeing how all those pieces come together. That, says the book, is the epitome of simcha. I always love that Rav Kook. Everyone hears that idea? I always love that idea of Rav Kook. So sometimes you see people that cannot make peace with their life. This isn't the best example of this, but I always think about this example. This thing is sort of like a reef in a way, or it's so glop in a way. My father used to be a professor in Cornell, in Ithaca. So I used to go up to visit him. Shabbos, even like, anybody know before Cornell? Beautiful place. I used to live in the Jewish home there in Cornell. And then there's a guy who was there in Cornell, and then a couple years later, he ended up in YB's Metaphysical, very Jewish looking guy, people like Mr. Payas. And when I met him, then a few months later, I said, "Oh, yeah, I think I remember you because I didn't used to go to Cornell, right?" He's like, "If you don't mind, please not mention that to anybody here. I try to keep like that piece of my life, you know, hidden from the base medrash." I'm like, "What was I going to embarrass? No, I'm not that person anymore." And I'm like, "Oh, I wasn't going to tell him. I thought he was, you know, somewhat absurd, but I'm not going to, you know." But a lot of people, in a way, that again, that's sort of a very, very like a brief example of like sort of like a lack of peace with where we are and where we come from. And the greatest simcha is saying, you know what, I went through such and such a struggle when I was younger. And perhaps I dealt with a difficult family situation. Perhaps I had this in my life. But all that has come together to allow me to be where I am now. And each one of those pieces allowed me to be standing here in this day with the ten of the Odefa. Each one of those pieces allowed me to sort of be here. I always loved the concept. I never saw this inside, but I think it's an emistic idea that when, of course, we have the Shvir Saluchos, the Shivrei Luchos. So what happened to the Shivrei Luchos after Tegego? Where are the Shivrei Luchos placed? Of course, into the Aron Kodesh. And you would think, like, Shivrei Luchos, the sign and the symbol of the degradation of Klal Yisrael, the sign and the symbol of the greatest desertion of Klal Yisrael, and you're going to take that, and you're going to put that into the Aron Bris, you're going to put that into the Aron Kodesh, you should bury it, you should toss it off like a bridge somewhere, right? But the point is, no, you take like every piece of your life, and that becomes part of your Kedusha. That becomes part of a person's like sanctity, that becomes part of a person's narrative. And when you can have that, that every piece is in balance with each other, it's an enormous, enormous simcha, and that was the idea of the book. Okay, let me just mention these two last things that already were finishing up, 3:30, right? I've been doing this here, I think, 6-7 years, and I forget every single time, what time it ends, so please excuse my old age. But
one of my favorite books. I imagine that those of you here who went to MNY or maybe other places have read before. You've been here to read Ish Halacha, Halacha Man. So it's one of my favorite books. I have to make a confession that I read it when I was like your age initially, you know, 20, 21, 22. And I thought I understood it. I had these like underlines and arrows and notes. You don't have nothing to say for what you're excited about. And, like, you're marking up the whole thing, like, you have something so great to say about in this book. And then you look back on it later, like 20 years later, and you're like, I had no clue, like, what in the world he was talking about. So Halacha Man is not the type of thing where, like, you just have to go back to it over and over again just to sort of get the profundity of Russell Aichik. But one of the things that I loved about the book, or the Sefer, was that he mentions in a footnote that he would read every year before Yom Kippur an amazing work by Leo Tolstoy. Anybody know what it was? Was that one of the shortest works? The Tolstoy fans here? Yaakov Kamenetsky was giving shiur in Torah Das, you know, some 60 years ago, and he made an allusion to Anna Karenina, the book and not the movie. And none of the guys in the shiur in Torah Das had read Anna Karenina. He's like, you don't read Tolstoy? Like, this is Yaakov Kamenetsky. He's like, what's wrong with you guys? And he was like, totally just shocked about not reading Tolstoy. If you have to read one person in the world, I think it should be him. Anyway, this book was called The Death of Peter Milyovich. It's a short story, about 70 pages. It's so incredibly powerful. And it speaks about how this Ivan Ilyich, who was an incredibly unpleasant person, not a good father, not a good husband, but an egomaniac, etc., how he became very ill. And in the last moments of his life, he had this like redemptive moment of recognizing that the only thing that was really valuable in his life were the things that he never paid attention to, that he never kept close to him. And it's sort of tragic. That's not incredibly beautiful that he had like that moment of like Yesh Kono Lama B'Shachas, like who's the character in Marvel Zara, yeah, Elizabeth Dugai, like there's like a moment of wow, sort of the seeing the reality of life, that moment of tshuva. And I know that all of you know this, but I think we all benefit from living a life in which we are constantly clear about the things in our life that are going to bring us happiness. And those are the only things we should ever lose sleep about. And I imagine that I'm just like all of you, you know, at least for me, you know, one's children and one's spouse and one's family, a relation to God, a few close friends. And that's all you really need in the world. Everything else can serve as a vanishing universe. And you'll go somewhere else and begin again, but you have like sort of like those sozos in your life. And as long as we sort of stay focused on what is sort of in the middle of the circle and what is sort of on the periphery of the circle, then you know, we never sort of get sidetracked. It doesn't mean we don't work hard at everything. So we need to start to let's not allow us to sort of define ourselves. I want to tell you a personal story, but it's sort of like a story of a certain amount of, I guess, pride for me. And I always sort of think back to this whenever I forget the message I just mentioned. So the same child who started high school last week was, for a period of time, he was like in a school outside of New York. Okay? And we had to go visit him last year. There was like some parent conference, et cetera, et cetera. We had to be there. It was starting on a Thursday morning. Okay, that Wednesday, our daughter, Huva, graduated from CERN, got to the airport in JFK. Always a nightmare, no matter when you're there, and just, you know, you can leave 10 hours, and it's never enough, and so we get to the counter at Delta, and it's like 58 minutes before the flight's supposed to leave, and it was a three-day yuntage, it was Shabbos, and we brought like bags and bags of kosher food, and suits, and chapels, and all of that stuff, and the lady said, oh, no, it's 50, one of those, you know, one of those, like, no, it's 58 minutes before the flight's supposed to leave, you can't, like, check your bags, and it's like 6:30 in the evening. I was like, man, you gotta be there. You know, can you please like get on this flight? She's like, well, you can just fly tomorrow. But this parent conference starting tomorrow. Like, we cannot go tomorrow. Like, we need to get on this flight. Like, what can we do? She's like, oh, you can't do anything. Yeah, I'm so sorry. You know, not that she's so sorry, but you know. So, you know, of course, we cried a little bit. That didn't seem to work. And she's like, well, maybe you can do whatever. And we're like, okay. She said, well, you know, you're not the problem. Like, the bags are the problem, right? So we said, okay, fine. So we just dumped the bags in the middle of if you can go there now, if you want some suits and chain pearls on Old Delhi, right in the middle of like Terminal 2 and JFK. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, listen, we're just going to leave it. Like, you know. So when someone asked me afterwards, like, how did you find this stuff? I'm like, you know, these are your children. Like, this is your life. You know, you sort of take what you need in life, which is incredibly minimalistic, and doesn't leave everything else behind. Like, what else is there? And when you sort of have the mentality, you take what you really need in life, and all the other things are things that just sort of, like, roll off your back and just, there's just an enormous simcha in that simplicity. There's enormous simcha in that tashva, so to speak. So last concept I wanted to just mention, and that is the simcha of being Pnei Hashem, being standing in front of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, the verse speaks about the simcha of being Pnei Hashem. By the way, that language, I mean, something that many of the Dalai Lama speak about. Rav Soloveitchik has a number of beautiful essays on this topic. The Tachas Shel Levatos Simcha B'Tivleivav, that like that Simcha, the lack of Pnei Hashem. Yontiv is the ultimate paradigm of Pnei Hashem. Sukkot is more so, but Pnei Hashem doesn't mean like coming to Shalayim, and Pnei Hashem doesn't mean, you know, Dol Pnei Miata Omei by Tefillah. And it doesn't even just mean sort of the consciousness that there's like a God in the world. All those things are important. But it's like living your life, that sense of like God's presence. Not in some type of like Bible thumping type of way, but not in some type of like weird type of way. But there's like just a sense that like, you know, our life means something, and that Kodesh Baruch Hu is there as like a gentle sort of companion. Just an image I always loved. And again, the Rav had such a way of speaking. Said that after his wife, everyone, I imagine most of you know that his wife and his brother and his mother passed away in 1967. And so he was totally just so depressed. He spoke about this very openly. And he said that the only thing that got him through, that he was in his apartment, he would learn late at night. And he said he would feel like the gentle hand of Kodesh Baruch Hu on his shoulder. Okay, he choked up. You know, that gentle hand of Kodesh Baruch Hu on his shoulder while he was so depressed during that period of time. So what does that mean? So that means that, like, I know this is so obvious, but like, whatever we're going through and whatever place we are, and the happiest of moments, the least happiest of moments, there's just like a sense of Kodesh Baruch Hu is with us. And we deeply, deeply, deeply feel that. That's what our lives become. Like the Dovah Melch describes being like Bani Tefillah, that I myself am a prayer, which means I myself like feel that continuous presence of Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's like a different type of life. It's a different type of way which we approach like every piece of our lives. Every disappointment, and everything that doesn't go exactly right. It's just like an acceptance and a peace. There's a thought that I had this past year, and we've been learning in our shul. We finished a few months ago learning Sefer Iyov. If you learn Sefer Iyov, it's so awesome to hear. It's totally impossible, but like if you learn it the right way and you skip enough in the middle stuff, and I had this close of taking it with Morty Cohen back in 1994. I was like, anybody think Grant Cohen still teaches here at CERN? You take him like every semester, if not more. He's just like the best. So if you know Sefer Iyov, at the very end of the Sefer, it says that Kodesh Baruch Hu appeared to Iyov b'sa'ara. Right? What's b'sa'ara? In this tempest. And all of a sudden, Kodesh Baruch Hu means like appears out of nowhere. Iyov was not a Navi. How was Iyov even so fit to the Vuva? There was no preparation for it. There was no, like, anything. There was no... So, I thought to say the following, that earlier on in Sefer Iyov, in Perikes, Iyov says, "Keep a sa'ara yisturfemi." He says that God has placed me, like immersed me in the sa'ara, in this tempest of feelings. And to some degree, again, I hope this makes sense to you, a Kodesh Baruch Hu appears like out of that sa'ara, like later on. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't appear from a place of necessarily peace or shalva, you know, sort of holding on that that's say from the lofting. Kodesh Baruch Hu appeared to Iyov, like from the place of Sahara. So why do I say that? Because we really feel connected to a constructivity. So everything we go through is like an opportunity to feel some level of faith and speciality. It's an opportunity to feel God's presence in our life. And when you have that, there's very little tension. There's very little, I wanted this, and I expected that, and how come this happening that? No, no, it's just like, there's a certain like gentleness, a certain nachas ruach, a certain acceptance. There's a certain feeling, again, of like that gentle companion that, that leads a person or escorts a person through life. A person has that, such a sense of simcha, a very sort of gentle way, very tender type of way. So those are my thoughts about simcha. Simcha that comes through faith. Simcha that comes through focusing on what is real and what's necessary and leaving the rest. Simcha that comes through a life of meaning. Simcha that comes through a life of expansiveness. Simcha that comes through a life of acceptance and embrace of people. And if that should go true, going back to what you mentioned before, all of those things are deeply, deeply internal. It's not a myself. It's not, okay, you know, go put like a lampshade on your head and dance around and drink a beer and pour in. Like, no, that's not simcha. It may be fun. I've tried before. It is fun. But it's not simcha. You know, simcha is only something that truly exists inside the consciousness of man's soul and of man's heart. It's not subject to halacha. It's not subject to an action. Being a night with simcha, that we know what that means. I do this, and I sit low on the ground, and I bash through my head, and that's sort of the actions of a neilus. Simcha, by definition, is not subject to shulchan aruch. It's only subject to refined, developed, gentle, faithful, embracing, calm, joyous inner life of a person. And when a person has that, it's just a different life. It is a different type of life when a person has that. So, Mishem, in the honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar, I shall have a beautiful, meaningful Rosh Chodesh. If I can ever be of any assistance to you, either in these areas or in any other area, I don't know if you email me at lats@yu, or just email, and look forward to a year of growth and a year of simcha. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.